Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next, and we are in Jamestown once again today in advance of the Jamestown Dance Festival coming up on September 7th and 8th. We should note that that is the first Jamestown Dance Festival. We'll get into some of the specifics as we move along here in our conversation. But we're very pleased to have with us, before we talk to Sukanya Berman, who is the artist behind this effort here and the Sukanya Berman Dance Company, we have with us two board members from the dance company, Ellen Shadle and also Amanda Giesing. And thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Let's talk into a couple of things. Amanda, actually, we had some conversations before because you're the executive director of the YWCA here in Jamestown. You're relatively new to the Jamestown area to a certain extent. When you talk to people in the community about the idea that there's going to be this dance festival, what are some of the reactions you're getting?
People are really excited about the opportunity to have something that really sounds like it should be in New York City here in Jamestown, and the ability to explore all different types of dance and dances that many of us have probably never seen or had the ability to witness in person before.
And then we'll turn that to Ellen, who has a little bit of a different background because you were just, in fact, that somebody who ran a dance company in New York City, and here you are now in Jamestown. So again, the reactions that you're getting from people that you know.
Certainly. It's probably pretty similar to Amanda's as well in terms of people being really impressed that something like this is going to be presented in Jamestown, where it seems like these kinds of things skip Jamestown. But thanks to Sukanya, we are going to be able to be the beneficiaries of that.
And of course, the dance company has had an influence on the area already. I mean, you probably can give us a good perspective on what the dance company has brought to this area and, you know, just what that means from a cultural standpoint.
Absolutely. Having a professional dance company in Jamestown is certainly a unique thing. And so while there's great culture in the area, both in terms of visual arts and performing arts, having a professional dance company is definitely something a little bit of an outlier, but it also does really complement and complete the cultural picture in the area so that everything has some representation inclusive of dance, which is often kind of very difficult to include.
How coincidentally you just stole my question. So let's talk about just that, especially from somebody with experience in the professional dance world. Like you said, you know, we think of, you know, whatever. It could be that which is painted, that which is acted, written. But dance probably does fall down a little bit on the lower end of that scale. So maybe just talk about what you see as someone who's a professional, what it, you know, how it's, for lack of a better term, value, or how it reflects arts and helps to express artistic messages.
Certainly. I think one of the misperceptions about dance in comparison to other art forms is that it has unique demands in terms of how it's created and how it's presented. And the arts are often grouped together collectively for lots of explainable reasons. But dance is an art form that really requires a very collaborative approach from the inception of anything, whereas a composer does not need an orchestra or a band to compose their symphony, and a screenwriter does not need actors to create their script or their screenplay, while a choreographer and dance companies need those dancers as part of that creative process. And so I think getting those, understanding those distinctions in terms of how dance is a unique effort to really create and present can be really useful for people to understand.
I'd like to continue to explore that, but I also want to kind of keep moving around here for the conversation's sake to Amanda on this then. So as a board member, maybe just take us back to just the idea that you just getting involved into this. I mean, you're at the YWCA. I'm sure you want to be involved in as much as you can in the community, but how you saw a value in having a dance company in Jamestown?
Well, I think anyone who meets Sukanya knows that she has so much passion for dance that when you get to know her, you can't help but be passionate as well. I have no formal dance training, but I can appreciate the beauty of dance and also the ability to explore cultures and to learn about other people, and doing that through art is important. And Sukanya is able to bring that with her studio. And really, just another opportunity for Jamestown and Chautauqua County to become a place of, and continue to be a place of belonging and inclusion for everyone. And this is just one more way to celebrate and enhance that opportunity.
A couple of things inside there, learning. So how about you? Like you said, you probably had a little bit more dance exposure than I have, that's for sure. But how about from what you've learned now, just to be affiliated, what you have seen, Can you express maybe what, you know, how, as Ellen was talking about, how that the artistic message, again, for lack of a better term or interpretation, what you have kind of learned of how you've experienced it and how you've come to understand it?
Really just the beauty of it all, that everyone thinks of Indian dance in particular as, what is that term? The Bollywood kind of dancing, and Sukanya is able to bring that. That's not the only dance in India. In fact, that's not, that there's a lot of other ways to experience and celebrate, and to learn some of the history of the dances that she's done. And I'm not going to try to say their names, so hopefully
we'll get into those specifics.
Right, any of them. But it's really just been fun to watch the dancers grow and the whole organization grow and develop as she continues on the process.
Right. Back to the idea that, you know, having now another additional element to the culture of Jamestown. We've had this conversation with you, we're on What's Next, or what does Jamestown need? But I mean, how does it help to fit that puzzle a little bit?
Well, it really gives everyone a place of belonging, right? So as Sukanya continues to partner with the New Neighbors Coalition, and we celebrate World Refugee Day, and she's able to do dances there, and as she's able to have like her dance, the dance festival coming up, and open up opportunities for everyone in this community to explore different cultures and different people and different celebrations and different dances, things that we may have had the opportunity to experience on TV or watch on TV, but never watch in person. So we're bringing all these new experiences and opportunities that unless we went to a larger city, we would never have the opportunity to have here, which I think helps further conversation and just really help people understand that people live differently, celebrate differently, dance differently, and that's all beautiful.
You know, I've been really been fortunate in the last few months to spend a little time here in Jamestown, so I'm slowly getting to know it. But I don't have a lot of understanding. I think you mentioned, you know, International Refugee Day. Is there a refugee population in Jamestown? Obviously, of course, Buffalo most certainly has, and I'm just curious about that in Jamestown, if either of you can expand on that.
Yes, so Journeys End does work down here as well, okay. And it is a growing community. We have a couple organizations that are specifically in Jamestown to help refugees and immigrants resettle here. And so there is a growing community of resources and supports that are happening as a result of that. And I think Sukanya is part of that. And she is also part of helping celebrate the differences in our community. And that has been wonderful to watch grow. And it really has just been over the last year or two that that's happened. But it really is this growing sense of acceptance in our community that I think things like Sukanya Berman Dance has really helped elevate and escalate.
And Ellen, maybe I'll just kind of just nuance that question just a little bit, but how have you seen the population of Jamestown? I mean, I can talk about the Buffalo story with when it comes to refugees in the last 10 to 15 years. And, you know, the Buffalo West Side is a thriving place once again because of the refugee community. But we also hear, and, these are stories that aren't uncommon across the country, where, the acceptance may not be there. How have you seen that merger coming here in Jamestown? Is it, I'm not even going to characterize it. I'll let you just do it for me.
Well, definitely the diversity of the community is changing and increasing in its diversity. And so just being able to encounter a neighbor that may be new to the culture, new to the area, bring their own culture, those encounters cannot be minimized in terms of what kind of impact they can have. And I think to whatever degree circumstance can really foster those encounters and start to facilitate shared experiences among community members, that really helps to support and foster those sensibilities to come along.
Both you and Amanda are outsiders to a certain extent, expats or whatever word you want to use, relatively newcomers to Jamestown. From that standpoint, to see that expanding culture from around the world, whether it's through the dance company or through the new population, how does that make you, I guess, feel about your community? How does it give you hope or whatever the case may be moving forward? What do you think? I'll let both of you kind of take that one on.
I mean, I'm excited. I think that it can only tend to grow our community and bring in more wonderful things like Sukanya Berman Dance Company, right? Like if we can continue to accept and make this Jamestown a place of belonging and where everyone can thrive, then we will only grow to experience more events and activities and greater things. It's only going to amplify.
You want to take a shot at that one? It's to Ellen?
Sure. Yeah. I think, on the surface, it's kind of the trait idea of there being so much potential
right
in Jamestown. But that needs to be accompanied by curiosity and risk-taking and a sense of possibility. And those are really internal drivers that can be challenging to cultivate. Not impossible, but in terms of those that are coming to the community, I think that is a factor in things that can help present new ideas and start to challenge those ideas around what's possible and what is, what kind of city Jamestown is. Jamestown is the type of city that blank.
Right.
Right. And now it has lots of things in that blank.
Right. And I guess I'll ask both of you, and I'll probably get a confirmation of this, but there's plenty of room, I guess, maybe for someone to grow and to bring new ideas to a town like Jamestown. Agreed?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely agreed. Jamestown has the great assets of really climate,
right,
cost of living, and a character of the city as really a historical city, and those things provide a certain framework to really facilitate pathways for people that are entrepreneurial, again, are risk takers, and having the ability to experiment and do those things. Where is in another place with higher cost of living and housing challenges that accompany that, that's harder to do.
You know, it's interesting, you're talking about history, and it's worth mentioning, we're of course on radio, but this beautiful mural that's inside this inside the Sukanyo Berman Dance Company's offices here. I mean, it's a reflection of old times advertising of tobacco, but it's this old, I mean, this is, you know, just looking at it, just, it gives you that sense of something, the types of things that are unique, I would say, and maybe you can both expand on that, what you've seen since you've come over with that, a little bit of the outsider's eyes. You remember your first thought on that?
I absolutely appreciate the architecture here. It's actually very gorgeous. And the buildings, there is a lot of potential for growth downtown and a lot of space that is ideal for arts and dancing and art and music. And there, it's available throughout the community. The number of studios or theaters and small theaters that we have here really surprised me when I found out there's actually quite a few for the size of community that we have.
Well, Jamestown hasn't cornered the market on the coexistence of the well-weathered and modern uses, and neither has New York City. So there's a lot of parallels to be found, as New York City is a historical city as well. So I think it's always a really satisfying thing when you can coexist with history and what you're creating for the future as well, to really have those reference points and the impact that being able to interact with that can have on the creative process.
What will you say that we're going to see, as best you understand it, at this coming festival? Because there's a lot that's going on inside this two-day festival.
Absolutely. Well, you're going to see world-class performances at the very least. And so there is an eclectic curation of the program. So in terms of those companies and the what's the word I'm looking for? The aesthetic that they all bring.
Right.
You know, there's certainly always common threads through any technique or genre of the discipline. But what is always exciting is to see how that common thread can be knit into different fabrics. And I could go down a metaphor rabbit hole.
I like rabbit holes. They're my favorite things. So how about just a thought? What, to the novice who's coming to this dance festival, and like you said, you're going to get world-class performances here in Jamestown at this festival. What would you advise the novice to look for? Or is it best just to sit back and
it's just to experience it.
Yeah.
It's just to experience it. And that can be a really intimidating thing for
Absolutely.
Some people, especially with the dance form. Whereas when you're an audience member in a play, you understand the words that are being said.
Right.
If it's Shakespeare, there might be some other things that you need to lean into a little bit. But otherwise, you understand the words that are being said. Music has a different kind of universality to it, and in terms of the access to it. So in terms of people feeling comfortable in a music setting, that is somewhat different for dance. People don't have the same access to it. And so it can be intimidating to feel as though they're supposed to understand something. There's something to translate. There's some message that they're supposed to be getting from it. And that may or may not be the case. What I find interesting that is not really necessarily a standardized practice, but you'll see it once in a while, is that there will be program notes in dance programs from the choreographer about their intent and their creative process. But that's not really standardized. Whereas when you go to a museum, lots of times there'll be a statement from the artist as to what they, you know, what kind of period they were in when they created this this painting and kind of what it meant for them, kind of things. So the audience member, as you know, viewing a painting on the wall, gets some insight from the artist. And you don't always get that in dance, and that can be a little bit intimidating in terms of, I don't know what my instructions are here.
Right.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, as someone who's not trained at all in dance, it is interesting when you think of it that way, because growing up we're taught how to interpret art or to analyze art, paintings, plays, music, but it's, dance isn't one that you explore through childhood or through schooling on how to understand it or to look deeper into it. So it's something that I've never really thought about until we had this conversation. That's very interesting.
Be careful. People might think this is a provocative show. So then how about for you, Amanda? Then what are you looking forward to?
Just really to appreciate the beauty. Like, I've had the opportunity to watch the last showcase, which was the local artist in residence. And I just walked away really just inspired and in awe of their talent. And just able to appreciate the beauty of the movement and the music. And it was fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to watching everybody else's faces as they watch these world-class performers.
And I got to ask one more question of you, Ellen, because you can share something about Sukanya's journey. What is life like for a professional dancer? Someone, this is what they're committed to. And it's we cannot overlook the fact that it is a physically demanding vocation. So what can you share with us about that?
Life as a professional dancer for the average professional dancer is wearing lots of hats, and that hat can change from minute to minute, not just hour to hour or day to day, week to week. It can change from minute to minute. And on the one hand, that can be really exhausting. On the other hand, it really equips dancers and choreographers with a really unique skill set to be adaptable and nimble in terms of how they can approach the needs of any given moment.
Well, I got to give you both credit, because you really have adapted to our makeshift radio studio here at the Sukanya Berman Dance Company offices and these different types of chairs. But I appreciate Ellen and Amanda. Thanks for joining us on What's Next.
Thanks for having.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more right after this on WPFO.
Hi, I'm Christina. I love exploring the world around me, and I have behind-the-scenes VIP tickets to some of the most exciting places and people in Western New York, and you can come along with me from wherever you are. Let's go! A new series you can watch on WNED PBS, the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel, and on PBS Learning Media nationwide.
So let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go!
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're on What's Next in Jamestown, New York, and with us now here in the offices of the Sukanya Berman Dance Company, we have the Executive Director, Daryl Simons. Daryl, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
And of course, the Artistic Director, and that is Sukanya Berman. Sukanya, nice to see you.
Nice to see you here as well.
There's so much to talk about here. Just about, give me the genesis of the concept that there was going to be this dance company in Jamestown. Please, you can start from the beginning, wherever you want to take us.
Okay. We start from once upon a time.
Please, that's the best way to start every story.
Okay, so I always had this vision of having a professional dance company, wherever it is, wherever in the world. I moved to New York City in 2013 to attend the Martha Graham School of Contemporary Dance. I had a scholarship to attend their independent training program. So I was there for 2 years, trained under the Graham teachers. But prior to that, I grew up dancing ever since I was 3 years old, but most of my training was in Indian classical forms of Bharatanatyam and Kathak. So as I kind of navigated through life, you know, went to college, got a degree in chemistry, and then...
Well, there's a whole other story to get
into. Right, you know, a good South Asian kid, parents are like, hey, you gotta like either be an engineer or a doctor or whatever, you know, and got my degree in chemistry, did not pursue that route because I thought that was not compatible with what my artistic vision was, but that was to make my parents happy. I went to a completely different route. I auditioned for a dance company in Calcutta, India, and it was called Rhythm Mosaic, and we toured nationally, internationally, performed in different countries, gathered a bunch of experience, and then came to New York to train at the Martha Graham School of Contemporary Dance. And that dream was there, you know, from the very beginning, to open up a dance company. But New York is a hard place to be for an entrepreneur, especially in the arts field. There's not a ton of resources. And even if there are resources, it is very much limited to a certain kind of dance and art. And what I was hoping to do was not, you know, represented well in the art scene there. So, you know, I danced with a couple dance companies in New York as well. One was Navatman, which was an Indian classical dance company, and the other one was Indo-Rican Multicultural Dance Project, which was a modern dance company, but had a lot of cultural elements in it. So I was there for a while. My partner is from this area, Northwest Pennsylvania, Western New York. So we had visited this place long before, like, you know, back in 2016-ish. Okay. And we loved this area. We thought that this is such a positive place. You know, there's natural beauty all around. We have Chautauqua Lake. There are these hills around. So it's beautiful and a perfect artistic incubation space. So we found, you know, and the cost of living, as previously our board member mentioned, is very, very reasonable. So we found a house here. We thought that this might be our, you know, a fallback place whenever we retire. And we were in New York for the longest time, and the pandemic hit in 2020, and we decided to move back to Jamestown and make this our home. And, you know, quickly, we recognize that there is a lack of representation in dance in general. And even if the dance that is here, it is leaning towards a very particular style or aesthetic. So we wanted to create an alternative space and platform to really amplify the other voices in dance. And that's how we formed this company.
Wow. What an amazing journey, for sure. For sure. So, Daryl, how about take us from the perspective as the executive director, okay? And, you know, so, you know, you're from nearby Warren. It's just a little bit down the road across the state line. So you knew this area. When did you think, yeah, this could make a, probably knew it could make an impact in Jamestown, but could it work in Jamestown?
So, I mean, it's difficult to follow up what Sakani just mentioned, but what I'll say, just like any idea has a beginning, it has it's like planting a garden.
Sure.
It takes a while for that to manifest into a fully grown flower.
Right.
And we've always had this idea that wherever we live, we wanted our community to sort of reflect our own interests. And sometimes that requires elbow grease and building up of that entity. As far as that working in this region, I don't think we really had took this idea that seriously until the pandemic hit. And I remember we were sitting in our small apartment in Union City, right outside of New York City, and I had just pulled a piece of paper out, and we sort of created a roadmap of what we were thinking. Like, if we're going to move back to Jamestown and make a serious run at this, what would have to happen for this to work? Like, that was pretty much our original strategic plan, if you will, before we even had a nonprofit. So part of that was establishing the dance company, identifying dancers, trying to create some new avenues to perform, identifying funding sources, eventually a dance festival, though back in 2020, we really had no idea of how we were going to get there.
Right.
We felt like we had the determination to get there. So early on, I don't know if it was a belief based in reason. It was more of perseverance and just a desire to see dance more reflected in this community. And flash forward to 2024, and we're a month out from our dance festival, and I guess we manifested this into a reality.
What drew you into? You've told me you're not the dancer in this company, obviously. What drew you toward dance?
Besides Sukanya?
Well, or through her, actually. You know, what did you see from her work? I mean, again, in her dance, and she was talking about it herself. It's not necessarily the genre is probably not the exact right word, but it's not the one that you see being displayed all the time.
No, I think I bring a valuable perspective to the dance company in that prior to meeting her, I had the very quote-unquote normie perspective where I didn't know dance. I wasn't in the dance world. What I knew of it was within my community, and in large part, especially in Warren County, the only dance representation we had was in the competition space. And growing up, I actually grew up south of Warren in a small space at Titty U, 600 people. And we really had no dance representation at all in my community. The most dance I would see is maybe in some musical theater here and there, if they incorporated dance within the theater space. So I say all of that to say, I didn't know anything about dance. And when I met Sukanya and I started to learn more about her Indian classical forms of Bharatanatyam and Kathak, as well as the modern dance forms of Graham, it really just opened my eyes to what an entire artistic world that I didn't know anything about, but at my own core, I resonated with so much more deeply than I ever did of any of the other dance that I had been exposed to. If that answers your question.
That does answer my question, and I appreciate that. All right, so let's get into your dancing, Sukanya.
Sure.
And then what we're going to see at the dance festival. Let's just first talk about, you know, the type of dance that you have been bringing to Jamestown.
Sure.
Explain it to me, you know, because again, this is something that, as you even said it earlier, it's not something most of us see.
Yeah, so there's a lot of misconception about dance in general, but specifically dance that are not Eurocentric. So let's talk a little bit about Eurocentric dance and world dance.
Sure.
So, you know, I kind of blame the higher academia for this, for creating this binary of what is Western dance and then grouping everything else under the umbrella of world dance. And it loses, you know, a lot of cultural context, historical context, artistic context of various forms. So growing up, I grew up in India. I grew up in Calcutta, India, eastern part, where art is very integrated into the youth life. So you are supposed to either, you know, dance, sing, act, paint, whatever. That's a part of your life growing up. And every kid participated in something or the other, be it through the schools or through after school programs or, you know, extracurriculars. So my parents put me in this Indian classical form of Bharatanatyam. It is a very, very old form. It dates back to, like, you know, 5,000 years ago.
Wow.
It's really ancient. It has its roots in the Indus Valley civilization, they say. And India has a rich history of arts. We have 8 different Indian classical forms, and I have barely scratched the surface, so I have just learned Bharatanatyam and another form of Kathak later on in my life. So growing up, you know, as a kid, you go to classes, you perform, you do recitals, you go for competitions. So that was a part of my life growing up. People have this concept that Indian dance has to be cultural, and it is very culture specific to, like, the Indian subgroup, but that's not the case. It's just an artistic expression, and you can use that vocabulary to tell any story you want, very similar to ballet, very similar to jazz, very similar to tap, whatever you want to do it. But our forms are very percussive. So we wear bells on our feet to create sound. So this is like a one-person show. So you're kind of creating music, you're dancing, you're storytelling. It is, you know, it's very holistic in its approach. Mm. So that was my upbringing. And then I got introduced to jazz first when I did a diploma in contemporary dance and movement contemporary dance and movement, and I got introduced to jazz. It opened up my world to a whole different, you know, way of moving, and I was also introduced to modern, which I resonated with very deeply. And then I started living in two different realities. Mm. One was my Indian classical, and the other one was the modern dance of the West. And then I kind of grew up in that, and then it became my language. So all of my work is very kind of blended. It has elements of Indian classical. It has elements of modern, because, you know, I call myself a global dancer because I'm pulling in from all these different cultures and languages and vocabularies.
I'm fascinated by the history of this. So that, Indian classical. What about for you as you're going through this and developing what you're going to perform, how deep are you reaching? I mean, can you reflect on maybe some of these movements that might date back as far as, you know, I mean, you said 5,000 years. I mean, so that's, you're connecting with that?
Yes. So actually the project that we are presenting for the dance festival, we presented that last year here. I received a NISCA grant to do the project. It was called the Bayadere, Past, Present, and Future. If you're familiar with ballet, you would know that the Bayadere is a very famous ballet, and it talks about this Indian temple dancer kind of in an exoticized way, and tells the story of a temple dancer, but kind of appropriated in some ways. So I felt that it was necessary to actually tell the story of a temple dancer and what happened to them in the pre-colonial times, colonial times, and post-colonial times, and how we brought that now from the temples to the proscenium stage, and how that has affected all these other dance forms that we are doing, specifically in the US. So modern dance is heavily influenced by South Asian forms, Chinese classical forms, Japanese dance forms, and American indigenous dance forms. So the way we kind of presented the work was kind of showing the evolution of the dance from its very, very old stage to now, how it is presented and how much it has changed.
Can you characterize the change? And is it reflecting, like you said, maybe getting influenced by other cultures, or is it just, I mean, I guess I'll just let you take it from there.
Yeah, so the form that I specifically do, Bharatanatyam, it's very interesting because it is called classical, but it is actually not classical because, you know, during the colonial times, the British, as you know, India was colonized by the British, a lot of the art form was abolished. Temple dancers, these were female dancers who were not priestesses, but the way they would worship was through the arts. So they would dance and sing to the deity of the temple, and that was their means of worship. These women were very empowered back in the day, like pre-colonial times. They had property. They did not need to get married. They could have relationship with anyone they wanted, and they could live an independent life, which was kind of a taboo when we had other cultures come and invade India, specifically like monotheistic cultures from the Middle East. And then the British came in. They could not reconcile with this idea of womanhood. You know, someone who's free, someone who has property and wealth, can have relationships with anyone. So they banned the practice of dance and labeled these women as prostitutes. So the whole culture of dancing kind of went underground.
Wow.
A lot of the history was lost in the process. And there were some revivalists during the 1947 when India got its independence. We had some revivalists who tried to, you know, bring back the form, but these were all upper caste women who were working. And these were also influenced heavily by, you know, the Western culture too. So Rukmini Devi Arundel, she was one of the revivalists. She was friends with Anna Pavlova, who was a very famous ballet dancer. So Rukmini wanted to become a ballet dancer. And Anna and her, they had a conversation in the 40s where Anna was like, well, you have this treasure trove of culture and dance and art. Why don't you go and, you know, bring that back? So when Rukmini came back to revive the dance, she brought in a lot of elements of ballet into the dance. So if you actually see Bharatanatyam in its present context, it is very, very, the lines are very similar to ballet.
You know, I think I could listen to you give these explanations. I mean, it is fascinating from a historical perspective. But at the same time, I want to bring us back to what's happening here in the very near future. And that, of course, is why we're here, the Jamestown Dance Festival, coming up on September 7th and 8th. And with us here on What's Next, Sukanya Berman, and also the executive director of the Sukanya Berman Dance Company, Daryl Simons. All right, let's talk about the dance festival. What an ambitious effort here. Who wants to tell us about who was the one that pushed the other one to say that we're going to do this?
I would say she had the idea, but I'm the enabler.
Oh,
that's the dynamic.
Not a motivator, but an enabler. Very key distinction.
A motivator as well.
Of course.
So I'm a part of New York State Dance Force, which is a NISCA partner. We are a collective of 19 dance artists, advocates, activists all across New York State. And our mission is to kind of really amplify dance in our region. I'm the first South Asian member in that group. Prior to me, it was very like modern, postmodern focus. And then they brought me in to kind of have this different perspective on dance. We get some funding through NISCA to carry out our project. So we have the seed money. And I was contemplating on what can I do to really make an impact in our community through dance. And I thought, like, what other way than doing a festival where we not only bring world-class performances, here, but also elevate regional dance companies and show people that it can be done here as well.
Okay.
So it's not just that you have to bring artists from New York City to see a world-class performance. There are work that is being done within our region. So Buffalo has a very good dance scene. Rochester has a great dance scene. So also pulling those companies from there. So we reached out to some community partners, some foundations in the area. We pitched this idea to them. They asked us to, apply for some community impact funds. We did that, and they were very excited and elated that we are doing something like this. So that kind of snowballed into what we have today. So we are bringing two dance companies from New York. One is Burka Patel, Burka Dance Company. She is a Bessie Award winner. And if people don't know what the Bessies are, they are like the Tonys of dance, the Emmys of dance, So she won the Bessie Award for 2023. Amazing, amazing Kathak dancer, very percussive, bringing live musicians along with her. So we have like a team of four musicians who are coming with her, and she's doing this work, which shows the two worlds, the traditional world of Kathak and then the contemporary world of Kathak, what has happened. The other company we're bringing in is called Souls of Duende. We thought that the company should be reflective of the community we are in, and specifically the community that never really sees themselves on stage.
Right.
So it's a trio, it's a dance trio of Kathak, Tap, and Flamenco. The artist we have there, one's name is Brinda Guha, she's a Kathak artist. We have Amanda Castro, a Puerto Rican tap dancer, again, a Bessie Award winner. And then we have Ariel Rosales, who is also a Puerto Rican Dominican dancer as well. So we brought them. We have musicians who are from the Afro-Caribbean. We have musicians who are from the Bronx. These are percussionists, electric guitar players, different kinds of people kind of coming in for that company. They performed at the Joyce recently. We saw their sold out shows. We have a company coming from Rochester called BioDance. Their dance is a contemporary and modern dance focused company. And they do work mostly around environmental justice, which I felt was an important element to show as well, because, we are dealing with a lot of environmental issues.
Absolutely.
In our community as well. And then our company is also performing. We have four dancers performing the project that we did last year in a much more bigger scale. And then we have another international artist coming from India. His name is Sandeep Malik, and he's a Kathak dancer as well.
Wow. So there's plenty going on here.
There's more.
There's more. Oh, you were just pausing.
We're just pausing. We do have a film screening that we're doing,
okay,
both at Jamestown Community College and the Robert E. Jackson Center, which is free for the public. The film that we are showing is called Obsessed with Light. It talks about Loie Fuller, the pioneer modern dancer who actually brought in technology and fabric into the dance space. So it talks about her journey, but also other women technicians and lighting designers who have worked in this field and often not really kind of recognized for their work. And then we are doing a panel discussion and workshops with all of the companies that are going to be here.
Okay, very good. So Daryl, when I saw Sukanya mention about grant funding and things along those lines, I kind of saw that kind of half nod of affirmation, half of PTSD look. But but to take us, so I mean, take us now into what people should expect. We heard from Sukanya in terms of the level of dance here, but you know, just more from a consumer perspective, I should say. You know, draw somebody in. You know, how why should they be coming to Jamestown for the Jamestown Dance Festival?
Well, as Ellen so eloquently stated earlier, this is something that you traditionally do not see in our region. This is something that you would.
I'm not sure how many regions you see it in, but that's another story, right?
Very few. And even to get it from an accessibility standpoint, it's obviously very close to folks. We try to keep our pricing very affordable. The talent that we're bringing to this region is absolutely world-class. And the fact that you can see them at the Joyce, which, if you're not aware of Joyce Theater, they feature some of the best dance talent really in the world, people in the country, internationally. They feature some of the best talent. The fact that they had performed there, I think that should speak to the level of quality of dance that you're getting exposed to. And then just beyond that, for folks that are in the dance world, whether through the local studios, people that are curious, people that consider themselves artistic, people that want to see a thriving Jamestown culturally, artistically, economically, it's our view and estimation that festivals like this can help usher this community into that next level.
Right.
And I don't want to put an unnecessary level of grandiosity behind this festival, but we do think that this is going to bring an elevated amount of attention and interest and intrigue to our region, and the fact that this can happen here. So we're just excited to see the possibilities that would open up. And if any of what I just said resonates with those that are listening right now, we highly encourage you to come out.
September 7th and 8th.
Correct.
At the Reg Lanay?
Reg Lanay Center for the Arts.
I've been into the Reg Lanay, but why don't you describe what people will see there? Because in its own right, its own jewel here in Jamestown.
Yeah, the Reg has a rich history. It was actually been around for a little over a century now, but it had a bit of a tumultuous history in the sense that it was one of the theaters that were almost victim to time, victim to history, and it was through the efforts of many individuals back in the 1980s, really, that led the restoration efforts. And what you see of it today was a multi-decade effort to get to where it is now, and it has been recently restored as of like the last 10 years or so. It's this beautifully, classically styled theater.
1,200 seats.
1,200 wow. seat theater. It's two levels, two floors.
Comparable to
the proscenium stage.
But yeah, it's just a beautiful theater that I know when we have touring musicians, comedians, whatnot, this is a crown jewel of our community,
right?
As far as the theater is concerned. So we thought of no better place to feature world-class talent than in a world-class venue.
Let's turn back to the talent here for a second. So you're going to be performing, Sukanya.
I am. Yes.
And yet you're going to have to probably live and breathe this festival through 2 days.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I recognize that, you know, it's again, as Ellen said, that choreographers, dancers, artistic directors wear multiple hats. Mm-hmm. So I'm a grant writer. I am a choreographer. I teach classes. I, you know, manage my dancers,
marketer,
all of that, right? So yeah, it's exciting that I'll be performing. I'll try and rest up a little bit for the week of the festival, but yeah.
We've more or less cleared our schedules.
Yes.
Like the 2 weeks leading into the festival.
Maybe take a couple days off afterwards. Yeah. Maybe.
Yes.
How about physically though? How do you prepare for a performance like this?
A lot of conditioning, a lot of cardio work and strength training. We have rehearsals every week for multiple hours. Our dancers are working tirelessly for this as well. But my own section is a 40-minute section that I'm doing, a solo work, which is exhausting, yeah. Very, very exhausting. But, you know, we have already performed some things like this prior, you know, where we've done 3-hour shows and, you know, like marathons, literally. So this is not as challenging physically, I think, but mentally it is going to be really challenging as we are handling logistics, handling volunteers, the companies coming in and performing at the same time.
How about the world-class level of dancers who are coming in? Does that put a little spark into your performance as well?
100%. Like I think the dance community, the dancers, are very supportive of each other, and we really encourage each other to do our best. And if there is already world-class dancers on stage dancing with you and alongside, it really lights up that fire in you to kind of bring your best. But let me just put it out there, like, we are not in control of how our performance will be. There's so many determining factors. I think there's something external that kind of takes over you when you're dancing, and it depends on, you know, whether, you know, you're resonating with the vibe of the place, the vibe of the audience. So every performance is very distinct and different. And I think, like, if you would have seen me perform at the Robert E. Jackson Center a year ago, and you see me perform at the Reg Linet, it's probably going to be very different in sense of like energy and expressions and other stuff.
You intrigue me totally about that part of it. And it just kind of goes back to some of the questions I asked about the artistry that's involved in dance and how it connects or could connect with the audience. So let's to turn it back into you. Do you make adjustments then as you're going through your performance based on, like you said, the vibe of
Absolutely.
That you're going to have there?
So like if you're performing in a black box theater, like a smaller, you know, 100 seat theater, the way you'll project will be very different because it's an intimate setting than in a theater, which is 1200 seat and very kind of expansive. So you have to perform at 500% and not just, you know, 100%. Also, like, it depends on what kind of lighting is there, how are the audiences receiving your performance. Like, that kind of changes a lot of things. Also, like, I feel it's the mood of the day, how the weather is, all of that kind of plays into it. But we always try to maintain the level, either, like, maintain the level or go beyond that, but never kind of, you know, get below that.
Turning back to the executive directors, the Sukanya Berman Dance Company, ready for this festival?
I think as ready as we're going. I mean, we'll find out.
There's always more things to do.
It's the first year for it, so I mean, I know I've learned an incredible amount just over this past 7-8 months. It's the time that we decided we were going to do this to just everything that entailed. I think we'll be ready.
We're here, of course, with What's Next in Jamestown at your studio. So the interest drew us down here. You're hearing of similar curiosities, not necessarily from media, but just from dance aficionados?
Yeah, the people in the community that are aware of what we've been doing are super excited. Our students that attend our various community offerings have been incredibly excited. Some of the local dance studios that we've had an increasing partnership with, relationship with, are incredibly excited. And I feel like everyone that we have spoken to about this, it's a mix of excitement, a little bit of confusion, but definitely intrigue.
Okay.
We're very hopeful that this will be a success.
And then the final word, how do you, advice, whether it's to a novice or somebody who is a dancer, and they're coming to see this, what's a good way to approach it? What to look for, what to try to take in?
Just be a sponge. Absorb everything. Like, these are artists that's very hard to come across. The more we kind of open our minds to different possibilities in dance, the better our understanding of dance becomes. But also, like, there's so much more to learn, not just by viewing the performance, but participating in the panel discussions, because we are going to talk about a lot of equity issues in dance, specifically pay equity, racial equity in dance as well. We are also going to talk about, you know, how there is this lack of resources, not just in the dance world in general, but also like specifically to non-Eurocentric dance forms and how we can really elevate them. I think also dancers, dance enthusiasts who are coming to this festival would have a very holistic experience, We are also being very, very mindful about how can we be more inclusive. So we are getting an ASL interpreter to kind of talk about what they're going to see so that it's easier for the audiences. We are going to record the whole program so that we can, you know, show this later on. People can access these programs later on. We are also keeping our ticket costs very low. There's a lot of no fee and low fee tickets that people can buy. Okay. We are partnering up with Arts Access through ASI Western New York to offer like free tickets to individuals who cannot, you know, pay for the tickets, and also provide transportation for them to come over and watch the programs, not just within our community, but from Buffalo as well. We have partners in Buffalo who are also kind of spreading the word, as well as in Pittsburgh, New York, Rochester. So hopefully that will gather a little bit more attention and bring people over here.
Wow. Well, this is really exciting. The Jamestown Dance Festival is on September 7th and 8th, right here in Jamestown at the Reglan A. Center for the Arts. And the company that's pushing it forward is the Sukanya Berman Dance Company. Their executive director is Daryl Simons, artistic director is Sukanya Berman. And I thank you both for being on What's Next.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.